Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
Go ahead. First, Terry Wallum, Wallum Associates.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Eric Alingo, SJA Engineering.
Forgot Jody.
Sorry.
Jody
Creamer,
Community Development.
Mike Odrin, Olson Engineering.
Don Hardy with Berger ABAM.
Leslie Ernesty, Community Development.
Sharon Lumon Tobin, Community Planning.
Steve Bacon, Clark Regional Wastewater District.
Greg Schaefer, Community Development, Development Engineering.
Houston Aho Construction.
Travis Johnson, PLS Engineering.
Thank you. Do we approve the agenda?
Minutes.
We don't have a quorum.
We should have a quorum.
I'm getting one, two, three. Yeah, we have a quorum.
We do?
Six.
Two? Six. You're not counting yourself.
Oh. Does anyone want to make a motion to approve the minutes?
Eric said we don't need to unless there's changes.
That's usually how it goes, yeah. So,
yeah, we
need on it.
Okay. We need to make a motion. We don't need to actually.
So, no edits?
Thank you.
Okay.
You make a motion and ask for
comments. Okay. Eric started it. So.
He's in this class about how rules of order, and they say you don't have to approve minutes, or you don't have to do a motion for minutes of the agenda. So unless there's any changes, so you have to approve any changes to it. But if they're just accepting it, hearing no changes, it's approved.
We'll adopt the
minutes. Consent. Yeah.
Exactly.
Perfect. Okay.
The Development Engineering Advisory Board meeting is being recorded, and the audio will be posted on the DEEBS website. Any upcoming events?
Upcoming events on your back page. Just want to continue to recognize that the council is piloting a different schedule for their consent agenda, their weekly consent agenda, whereas it had normally been every Tuesday, usually in the morning. Since March and continuing through April, they're doing a first and third Tuesday evenings only, starting at 6 p.m. So you'll want to confirm specific consent agenda items and topics on the county webpage. They do have a work session scheduled, as you see there, April 16th, University District Title 40 Amendment. And then also work sessions, April 17th is the Transportation Improvement Program and 2020 Annual Construction Program. That's at 9:30 a.m., so that should be on a Wednesday, correct, for their work sessions. Yes, that's on a Wednesday. And then Wednesday, May 1st, we have code amendments to Title 40, start time 10:30 a.m. Below that, Planning Commission, no work session scheduled. However, they do have a public hearing to amend 40.510.040 Type 4 process legislative decisions and 40.560 plan and code amendments in all sections of Title 40. That's on April the 18th, 6:30 p.m.
Do we usually get updates on the transportation improvement programs, don't we?
I think once they have gone to the council,
Come
back in, yeah, and let us know what's been approved.
Gotcha. So it's not a pre-council review, it's a post-council review.
I'm not saying we couldn't do that, but I think that's
historically how we've done it.
Normally been the practice.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Any member announcements? I know we were meeting some agenda items that Greg had sent something out about that. So if there's anything for agenda items that we want to touch on or cover.
And that's for May.
For May.
Yeah.
We have June.
We're okay. Yeah. It's interesting. We've skipped over. So, yes, if there's any agenda items that either members have and want to bring forward or any that you'd like for me to contact staff about, of course, I'd be happy to do that. But right now, we're wide open for May.
I might suggest that we take time at the end of the meeting to review the work plan, see if there's anything that we want to get going on, that low-hanging fruit type stuff.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Title 40, comp plan and zoning.
Hi, I'm Sharon Lumontobin with Community Planning. So we have been to the Planning Commission in the public work session last week. We're going to a hearing next week. So I'm just going to walk you through, orient you what the changes we're proposing. We're not recommending any major policy changes and no new burdens on property owners. A lot of this is clarifying existing processes, moving things around so it's clearer, deleting references to expired RCWs and WACs, that kind of stuff. I sent you a packet. I don't know if you have it. It's 169 pages, but actually only the first 27 pages has substantial content types of edits. That's what we're going to walk through. The rest of it is just changing the word board to council. We added a definition for transportation analysis and made some Scrivener's edits to the rest of it. So the first 27 pages is where we're going to focus on. So that's what I just said. Okay, so I'm going to go at a higher level here. I mean, we're not going to go into the each section. So this is the type 4 process for legislative decisions. Anytime we touch the comp plan, whether it's an annual review or a docket item or the periodic update that we do every 8 years, it goes through a legislative process. It means it goes through the Planning Commission and the Council. We reorganized this section. We deleted the whole, all the old text and just kind of moved stuff around. And in the decision paragraph, we clarified that what's in the scope of this, that it touches annual reviews and docket items, development regulation, shoreline master plan, arterial atlas. In the process, we defined the type 4 process. In the procedure section, we clarified the scope of the Planning Commission, that they oversee type 4 except for things like interim actions, moratoria, and emergency legislation. We included a section on staff report, and we just clarified that we post it on the county website and email it to property owners. That's just kind of house cleaning for us so that staff and property owners know what we're doing. Pretty straightforward. And then our public noticing requirement, we just clarified. We have an existing practice of notifying property owners within 300 feet or 500 feet, depending on whether they're inside or outside the urban growth boundary. That was missing. We added that. It's something we do, but we just hadn't, it wasn't codified. In public hearings, we have a requirement in another section of code to post the Planning Commission recommendations to the county website within 3 days, but we had realized that that was in there in this other section of code, so we pulled it into here so it's clear. And we clarified that a vote requires a quorum of the Planning Commission. And we added a whole new section on interim actions, moratorium, and emergencies. It was already in there, and we just enhanced it to explain what we do. So I'm just going to keep going. Again, it's kind of a bird's eye view, so you can just see the types of changes. Now we're in the code section 4560.010. This is the plan amendment procedures when we update the comprehensive plan. This has our criteria and submittal requirements, so this is something that property owners and their representatives will need to know. So we rewrote our purpose section to clarify it. We just deleted some text and moved it around. Government coordination, we deleted text that referenced other jurisdictions because we can't regulate what they do. It didn't have any meaning. In the criteria for commercial map changes, it talked about market analysis and transportation analysis, and those aren't criteria, they're submittal requirements. So we just deleted that section and moved those to where they belong in the submittal requirements code section of 4560.050C2. For additional criteria for rural map changes, this was had been one section, and we divided it into two. So one for natural resource land and one for rural centers. And the reason is, we needed to align this with the WAC, which says that de-designation of natural resource lands must be done on an area-wide basis. This is distinct from rural resources. So we just split those in two and got consistency with the Washington Administrative Code. Tell me if you have any questions, you want to jump in. I'm just going to keep plowing through. Okay, so on the rural major industrial map changes, we deleted a reference to an expired RCW, and we deleted a reference to the concomitant rezone agreements because that terminology is been replaced with development agreement, and it will have a new code section. And under additional required criteria specific to urban holding map changes, So we, when we did the comprehensive plan update in 2016, we took care of this. It's not a comprehensive zone change anymore. It used to be, because you were, but we don't need this. It's a vestige. We just needed to clean up to get in sync with the comp plan changes from 2016. Under required criteria specific to urban growth area boundaries, we edited it for clarity. We deleted text because these items weren't criteria. We're adding text. We already require updating the six-year transportation improvement plan annually, but we didn't have it codified. We deleted out-of-cycle amendments because it's not the current practice. We don't regulate fees in this completely different section of code that handles fees. So you can see these are cleanups, nothing substantial. Changes to zoning districts and code amendments. This belongs in a Type 3 code section, not here. We had deleted this whole paragraph on concomitant rezone agreements, and the Planning Commission last week said there are still existing concomitant rezone agreements. Sometimes they come forward. We need to have some code language in there for them. You can't get a new one, but for the old ones even. So we're going to retain that. They'll vote on that at the PC hearing next week. So that language will still be in there to cover old existing concomitant rezone agreements. We added a definition for what is a docket. This is a whole new section, 560.040, that didn't exist. We were using Type 3 practices for all of our counter-complete, fully complete public noticing, and we just copied-pasted it and then fine-tuned it to adapt to us, so we have our own specific code language. So that's all new. And we have our own deadlines that make sense for this process. And so we're trying to ensure completion of fully complete by March 14th. And this is kind of the code. This is what's now in code. So it kind of explains that pre-ops are submitted. These are the same dates that were there originally, October to November. Pre-op meetings, October 15th, December 31st. There's been no change. Annual review applications are still submitted from January 1 to January 31st. There's no change. This is where we have a change. We used to have staff review was 21 days. It's now 14 to give you a fully complete review. Sorry. And then if it's fully complete, then you just go right along. If it's not fully complete, then the applicant gets another 14 days to complete it. The second staff review for that is 7 days. If you need a third period to get fully complete, which there are some people to do, you get 7 more days. And so we're ending here.
Just a question on that. This is just for annual reviews, or is that for all applications?
Annual reviews.
Okay.
So it's we're still ending on the same day, but we had to compress some of these earlier dates. So just wanted to make sure we nail this, because it's getting really hard to schedule all these with the Planning Commission. Their calendar gets full if we go longer than this. Most people don't do this, so it's just for the few that do. Most people get this right and get fully complete right out the gate. So this is just the few that don't. And so we're here before you today. We're going to the Planning Commission hearing next week, and we'll have our second council work session in May and go to a hearing in May 21st. So that's my quick walkthrough. It's really house cleaning. No major policy changes or anything that will really impact property owners.
Just another question on the dockets. Would that follow a different path, perhaps, or?
Well, dockets are county initiated, so things could come up, and they don't go through a fully complete process like that.
Gotcha.
It's just our own. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Any action required on our part?
If you have any comments, we still have an opportunity. If you want to show up at the PC hearing, any concerns, you're welcome to.
I think the PC was right in
keeping the conflict.
I mean, up to the lawyers and how to do it, but
it will retain that language.
I mean, concomitant rezones have been around for a long time, and so there's gonna be a lot of them hanging out.
There's probably hundreds of them.
Yeah,
that's what they said.
I'm actually pleased that the Planning Commission actually picked up on that.
Yeah.
Nothing against planning commission. Not that you just you're the closest one to me. And I was late, so I know. I got to make eye contact with
you
at some point.
Did you see the stink eye I gave you when you came in?
I did. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, Sharon. It's not enough to thank go you. Home. I got to get it here too. Seriously.
Well, you know.
I remember knowing all these people. Four votes.
Eric, your park subcommittee recommendations.
All right. And Steve was part of that as well. There's a few things in your packet. Some of them are probably something that we need to look at. This was more of a document that the Parks Board and MD put together, kind of together in the subcommittee. So the one that you're seeing at the front, this is maybe the one we should kind of go off of. The next one was a PowerPoint that was put together. I'm sorry, no, the next one is the next two pieces are what the Parks Board is submitting to the board. So they're submitting basically this letter, and then they're submitting kind of a simpler like kind of outline of the recommendations, which is kind of the sheet with the orange bars on it. So that's what the Parks Board is submitting. We might want to submit something in addition. We might want to submit our own letter that kind of goes into a little more detail on our items and also maybe stresses the impact fees. So going through the committee, it was really more on improving the plan. There wasn't really a formal recommendation to decrease the fees, which I think is kind of our that'll be something that we'll have to add to our letter. But if you want to kind of go back to the front page, I guess the last, there's also a PowerPoint in the back. And again, this was a joint meeting we had with all the parks boards in town, and we just did a presentation. It's basically just a summary of those same points with nice pictures on them. So kind of back to the cover sheet, it starts with joint recommendations. The top category is the stuff that both the parks board and DEEB agreed to in the subcommittee. So the first one is looking at developing smaller, more innovative parks. The function, not just size, should be considered when measuring the goals of the parks plan. The second one is private pocket parks and developments that are open to the public should be counted towards the total park inventory. The third bullet there, allow developers to apply for credits based on agreed upon standards created by the Parks Board and DEEB. This would allow for public-private partnerships and could result in more efficient development of facilities. So there's still some details there, but basically setting up a program for park impact fee credits.
Yeah.
So they just have to meet. They had some resistance on that because they didn't want to be splitting hairs on each item, what is and what isn't counted. And they also have like a plan that they've already kind of committed to. So if they start giving credits out for parks that are not in their plan or that they, you know, don't necessarily want, then they can't fund the parks that they had promised in their plan. So that's kind of the resistance we got from them. So kind of compromising, coming up with that, kind of getting it situated so as, you know, say the boundary expands the next time, we can be part of the allocating lands and they're not set on certain areas. Maybe they try to look at lands earlier in the process. They're not paying such ridiculous prices for the land.
And are there different geography for each park district or what? That might be helpful to understand that.
There is, and they already looked at kind of like outside of this process, they looked at combining some of those so they can spend money in different areas. But there's a whole book here. It talks about their whole inventory. There's a lot to it. Yeah. So you really want this is available publicly. I think you can download it and you can review it.
So. Part of the problem that they've got with the way their calculations for the PIF is that they have a structural deficit of parkland in areas that are pretty much fully developed. The only way to get your parks is to buy houses and tear them down and convert them to parkland.
Not necessarily tear them down, but I mean, I just
become, which is a very expensive way to do it. That was part of the discussion about the why don't we look at smaller and make them functional, but not require 2 acres to call it a park kind of thing, so that you could actually potentially buy that vacant lot that is just sitting there and turn it into a park without having to buy up a bunch of houses and tear them down to get 2 acres of land. So,
was there, when you talk about that 2 acres of land, was there any discussion about changing the definition of a neighborhood park as far as the size is concerned?
Yes.
Awesome.
That was part of it.
Yeah. That's kind of the first one, developing smaller parks and taking the function, not just the size in consideration. Because right now, they're doing these parks, and because the only way they measure it is acreage per 1,000 people, that's the only way they measure it. They're not measuring at all what the function is, how much developed acreage is within that park. So you do a little park. They have a 5-acre parcel, and they're developing a 1/4 acre of it into a park, and the rest is just grass fields. That one is maintenance for them. They have to mow the fields. They have to maintain them.
Or they leave it in scrub
brush. They just sit there. A lot of them don't even have trails on them yet. So there's really nothing that land's being used for.
Were they looking at maybe a different metric?
We discussed different metrics, and that's Eric kind of touched on it. They're hesitant to get into the minutiae of what's a park, because that was one of the things we discussed was, hey, you know, why don't we look at almost like a point system to figure out how your PIF credits are going to work. Mm-hmm. If you've got active recreation, a basketball, you know, a half court basketball or something like that, you get X number of points towards a park. If you've got walking trails, you get X number of points towards a park. Those, you know, types of things, so that you'd say, okay, a full-blown neighborhood park is 25 points. For this one piece, you get 5. And so that reduces your PIF because now you've taken up some of that need for that neighborhood park, kind of, or need for things in that neighborhood park, that type of stuff. So. But that gets into that nitpicking. How are you going to define all those things? Because you get somebody who puts a picnic table in there and says, "Look, it's a park."
So the next recommendation was explore a 2-tiered credit system. A lower PIF could be charged if certain levels of open space and recreational opportunities were met within the development. So kind of concept here is that I kind of compared it to like a sewer impact fee, where you may be able to provide some of the local needs, but you're probably not providing those larger things. You're not. It's like the treatment plant. Mm-hmm. So facilities like Luke Jensen are needed in the community. They still need to be funded. So no matter what you do on site, you're not like getting rid of the need for a large project like that. So having kind of a 2-tiered system where, say, you do like a large community, almost a PUD, where you're incorporating a lot of recreational opportunities in your site, maybe you don't have to pay the full park impact fee. Maybe you just have to pay that regionally significant piece, or the larger scale stuff. So you'd have 2 different fees. And again, that was something that was kind of explored, and maybe that's a way to reduce the fee fairly quickly. And it could be one of our recommendations. So the next one, collaborate more in park development and land purchases. Again, it's kind of more planning ahead. If people have it as they're adopting the growth plan, designate some parks then, find who's available to sell, what they can get, maybe even before they come into the urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm. So they can acquire parcels and then kind of build around them while they're still rural properties.
So it sounds like it's more of a proactive approach. Reactive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
What I worry about with the parks and their purchase price, and including, you know, homes and whether you can turn the home into some kind of a facility and or boundary line adjust the home out so you're not tearing down a home and then keep the remainder of the property. But, you know, the prices they're paying, I don't know that. You know, when we go to the table or anyone goes to the table, you kind of have a pro forma and a walkaway point, you know?
Yeah,
you only go so far.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't seem like the parks. I mean, the numbers that we saw were just shocking, you know, and in a way we compete against each other because if you're talking about acreage that you're competing for development in parks. But they were way above the, you know, and I don't know why. I don't think we ever got our fingers on exactly why they were, but I don't remember.
I think they listed, tried to explain that when we kind of pressed them on it, but I don't think we really got a good answer.
But you know, parks, should be, you know, if the landlord's just saying, I want that, you just got to walk away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Developer's not going to pay what the park's paying for, I don't believe.
No. Right. They should be competitive.
Anyway, it's maybe some communication. I think looking at it ahead of time is a good idea.
Yep. That was kind of what came out of that conversation. So the last one in joint recommendations is provide PIF credits for trails. Hmm. Again, those are pretty easy. They're a little easier to define. It's a trail or it's not. And if they would like to see trails and they interconnect, then we should be able to get credits for them.
So they have to be built to standard, though.
Built right. To the same standard, yeah, that is in the park plan.
Right.
So. The next category is stuff that we didn't necessarily agree on. Maybe we agreed on pieces of it, but there were some kind of fundamental, I guess, differences between the way they saw it and the way, you know, what Deep's position was on it. And the first one is joint areas like those associated with schools that provide recreational opportunities to the community should count towards meeting the park plan goals. And I've used this example a few times already. You know, Geyser is a perfect example. They have a little tiny park there in the corner, and that's all they count in the park plan. Now there's acres there, and acres. There's a football field. There's a track that people would walk on. There's all the baseball fields in there. They're used by the little leagues, similar to like Luke Jensen. None of that area is counted at all in the parks plan. So I went through because I was surprised how many of these other ones that I guessed weren't included, and I was right almost every time. They're just not included.
Yeah.
So when you look at having these acreage goals, and you're not counting big areas like that, you're basically overestimating your need because those needs are being provided somewhere else. So the challenge with that, however, why it wasn't a joint recommendation, is that some of the parks people felt that it's not necessarily always open to the public. During school, they can't use those facilities because it's being used by the school. The school could at any time say, you know, we have a closed campus and we're no longer allowing the public into these facilities. Or because of maintenance issues, it could have a lot of different things for that. So that's why I didn't make it on the joint recommendations. I see their point a little bit, but also the people that are using the facilities, a lot of them are children, and during the summer when school's out, or when the school's there, they don't need the facilities. So it is still providing a need in the community, and even if it's not 100% credit, I think there should be something counted.
Yeah,
it should be acknowledged in the plan.
A percentage.
There's people during the day that use the track. You see that.
Yeah.
Most schools, there's people, neighbors in the area that will use the track during the day.
I think technically it's supposed to be a closed campus during the day.
When the kids are there, it's supposed to be a closed campus. So.
But when you see, like, I always come back to Jason Lee. Jason Lee has a park sign on that was put up by the Parks Department. And there's a playground there.
Yeah.
And there's kids that go there. And, like, when my daughter was babysat right down the road, they would walk up there during the day and play before she was in school and during school hours. So at a minimum, there should be a percentage counted towards that, understanding that maybe not the entire facility may not be able to be used 100% of the time.
And I think with the commitment, which most of these have, you know, you look at the schools adjacently and what's across the street, is it Eisenhower? Yeah, I mean, they have a massive field out there. But if those are committed long-term, I would agree. You know,
and that was a joint partnership.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Geyser, I know our CCYF team practiced there, and then while we were practicing, you had people jogging that were, you know, citizens and people all over the place. I don't know about Ridgeville, their parks and open space, I don't necessarily agree with, but that whole joint, the whole big sports complex they built up there and the school and all that, that's all joint use, right? Public and private, I believe, the sports complex and everything. I don't know if that's a model.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how Ridgefield, I don't know how Ridgefield's using that.
I don't think they have a structure of a park plan either. I mean, they have it, but, you know, they don't.
No.
They don't. They're a smaller city. They don't have, like, a book like this. They just kind of have what their goals are. And I don't know exactly, but what their plan is.
Well, it's like a quarter of all their land.
Right, a quarter of all their land, yeah.
So, I mean,
it's pretty old space.
That's right. Yeah. So that's how you really feel.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah.
Well, now that everything's zoned RLD4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I will tell you.
So number two, the second bullet there under the joint recommendations, or I'm sorry, under the DEEB recommendations, there are many areas listed in the parks plan, such as open space, two-way facilities, trail complexes, and special facilities like sports fields. Some of the Alderbrook Park. What's some of those ones up in North County that are like the special?
Alderbrook Park.
Okay, so there's a few of these types of facilities that aren't classified on their maps. They're called special facilities. And there's a bunch of them, like Camp Louisville, Mud Lake, H.B. Fuller.
Camp Bonneville, right?
What's that?
Bonneville or Camp Louis?
Camp Louis. There's Camp Louisville, they say on here.
Camp Louisville?
I don't know. Well, there's a bunch of these. So I'm just reading right off their inventory. So there's kind of regional. There's they have two of them that they're counting. They have neighborhood parks and then the regional parks and the community parks. But these special facilities even, they're not counted at all on the plan. So when you look at the threshold for that percent acreage, I feel like they should have something counted. And they're used as parks as well. Even areas like, Luke Jensen, that's in here. So it's not counted in any of the acreage either.
That's in the special?
Luke Jensen's not counted?
Luke Jensen is...
The ball fields part of it is not counted, but the little three-acre neighborhood park...
The little tiny section, that's it.
What about, like, Whipple Creek? Is that...
So Whipple Creek's a regional park.
That's what
Whipple Creek is... Yeah, that one is. But again, if you look at it, you look at the size of the playground at Whipple Creek. And I think there's a bunch of them like that. It's a small little playground area. And then they have a bunch of unused area.
They have an incredible trail network.
Okay.
I mean, for walking too, you know.
They count WSUV, all those walking trails?
Yeah.
And that's another piece too. Those aren't counted towards the percent per acre.
What about Whipple Creek Trail System?
That's where we're just.
No, none of those. None of those are really counted.
That's huge.
We use it all the time. People go where. I mean, obviously where you're allowed to go, like WSU and things like that. And I agree with having, you know, lesser than the national standard because we also are blessed with a lot of very close proximity, incredible, you know, probably one of the best in the nation in terms of camps and open space and hikes and skiing and all these other things. But I know we have a duty to provide stuff within the community, but man, this... Seems like we have a lot of joint use stuff that doesn't get counted.
So the national standard kind of has a standard for neighborhood parks, regional parks, and to a certain extent, regional trails. So those are the ones that they measure the acreage on. But if it doesn't fall in one of those categories, even the parts that are don't necessarily count towards those categories. So things like, you know, all of the special facilities that are on here that I kind of mentioned, they don't fall into one of those categories. So they don't make any... They don't count at all in the plan towards meeting the recreational goals for the national standards. I don't know how to address that, but it seems like they should be...
There are some public-private partnerships with churches, too. I'm not sure if that's probably excluded as well.
They have the mini mods that were developed by county parks at just right across the street from Fazio Park. At the corner of 21st Avenue and 99th Street.
Okay.
And they have those mini mods. I remember, in fact, we may have laid them out. But I think the Parks Department, Clark County, were the ones that facilitated the development.
For the soccer fields, yeah.
Well, there's maps to kind of show you what is being counted, what's not. And I kind of just went through, every time I saw like an example, I looked it up, and usually I was... my assumption was correct, that it wasn't being counted. So again, trying to at least incorporate that into, yes, we're meeting some of our recreational goals with those parks. Because I think if you look at how people are applying these national standards across the country, they would probably consider all of Luke Jensen a regional park, not a special facility.
Yeah.
So by doing that, it's probably considered in their acres per thousand, which again overestimates what the need is going to be because it's not counted. It's outside those categories, and it's a special facility instead of a park. So that was one of our recommendations. We didn't get full buy-in just because of they probably weren't quite willing to give up the demand of the parks for it. So, again, we can agree to disagree on some things. It was really a pretty good process, and we had a lot more in common than what we thought. And we came up with kind of ideas that, you know, a lot of the stuff that were joint recommendations, they found the same benefits that we did, kind of working together, public-private partnerships, trying to get land, you know, for less money, the TIF credits, allow for probably a more efficient way to construct parks by the private sector instead of all public. They can maybe get some of the parks sooner. So back to the DEEB recommendations. The last bullet there is the plan needs to strike, and this is probably the one that really we need to drive home, is the plan needs to strike a balance between providing recreational opportunities and providing for affordable housing. By implementing the recommendations listed above, the capital requirements and associated PIFs may be able to be reduced. And that was kind of our goal to begin with when we went into this process was, you know, they had a wish list, and they even admitted it when they looked at this plan. They put together what they would like to see in their ideal world for funding, and they based the impact fees off of that. They kind of expected to get pushback, but the way it happened, it was on this time crunch with the comp plan, it just got adopted. I think we were the only ones that really even saw it and really objected to it. And we kind of got a deal from the counselors that we would revisit the plan. And we don't have time or resources to do it right now. We'll phase in the adoption. So it was a pretty significant, most of it was phased in the first year or the second year. So like 80% of it, I think it was, and then up to 90. And I don't know that they've raised it since the initial. It might be what are settling on is just the 80%, and they give off the, you know, they let go of the 20. I don't know where that's going to go. They do have a capital facilities plan, and the current plan does fund all that. And the parks department is, you know, fairly well funded at this point, probably unlike a lot of other areas in the county. And it's kind of due to, you know, partially the collection of the impact fees. So. So those were the DEEB recommendations. The Parks Board had one additional one, and again, it was that they need to increase goals for level of service. You know, currently the goal, what they're providing of acreage per 1,000 people is only 60% of the national standard, and they feel like they're not meeting that expectation. And from talking to them, I'd argue that, well, if they counted everything, I think
they're
they would.
Exceeding.
And they exceed it.
It'd be a lot closer.
Yeah, if not exceeding it. I mean, a lot of these areas provide a tremendous amount of acreage. If you
look at a national, again, I mean, the national standard, I know we need to look at. And if they're not counting things like Luke Jensen and things like that, then we're probably well there. But
what's the reason that they aren't counting these? Well, aside from the understanding about the schools, I mean, I can understand some of that.
And Luke Jensen was similar, that because the fields are reservable, they're not, they have tournaments there, they have...
So to be counted as a park and to be counted towards
the... It needs to be open to the public.
All the time, 24/7.
No, but a lot of parks are reservable.
They close at night.
You've got to... What's the one up in, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank, what's the ball field up in Salmon Creek?
That's Fuller. H.B. Fuller. H.B. Fuller. That's not counted.
That's ridiculous to me.
I mean, that's an recreational opportunity that serves so many, from little kids to big kids.
And it's packed.
So you have to reserve. You have to reserve pavilions in a park to have a barbecue or whatever.
Not anymore.
Because they're all being used. And then if you notice, H.B. Fuller has that, you know, the trail out on the outside that people use like crazy.
You can reserve, like a climb line.
Yeah.
You can reserve shelters there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do they count all of climb line?
Nope. Louisville, you reserve the shelters.
Nope.
I think that's not considered recreation necessarily if you're reserving the shelter for a picnic or a party. But I'm not sure exactly what the logic there is, but like the ball fields at Klein Line are not counted. The softball fields.
Yes.
Some of the girls, yeah.
Salmon Creek, including Klein Line, is actually counted.
Okay.
The ball field?
Just Salmon Creek, including Klein Line. I know it's Salmon Creek Park. It's not the ball fields.
Right.
Not the VGSA. That is not included.
So what about Frenchman's Bar? Is that on there?
Frenchman's Bar is on here.
It is, as a regional park.
As a regional park.
And Salmon Creek Trail is on there.
Only a small section.
The Greenway.
And you guys on it.
Yeah.
Why only
the sewer line? I mean, that. God.
That's because like of the sewer line.
It's first come, first serve for parking on a sunny day. This is baffling to me.
So when you look at the regional park map, I mean, basically you can see what the outline is. It's only counting a little bit of the developed area. So the rest of it that goes all the way over, if you want to look at this map.
Right, the miles of trails?
Yeah, the miles of trails. It's not in there.
It's about three and a half miles.
So you can kind of see what is counted, but that whole thing goes all the way to here.
Yeah.
So
use it every day with thousands of other people.
Yeah, so the park really is in fine line, there. And some of it is included, but not all of it. Again, if you count all that.
I'm looking at you at that one. Because
it's our sewer line.
You can have a sewer line through a park, you know,
just
can't use it. So.
Well, my wife does complain about the smell sometimes, Steve. I keep telling her, you have it under control. It's a matter of flow and in and out of water.
So at the end of the day, Eric, are you guys presenting this to the board or to the council and then having them make the decision?
I think so, and it is. I guess that's kind of the next step. Where do we go from here? Now we have our recommendations. They're outlined. I think we could add to it if you want, but there was quite a bit of time spent on these, and it's a lot of the things that we discussed in our previous meetings.
One suggestion I'd have, I don't know if it makes a difference or not, would be to understand what is incorporated in the national standard to see whether we're underestimating or overestimating. I mean, obviously, we're asking a question we don't know the answer to, but
that was brought up, and they actually had questions in the park board as well, and they were kind of asking their membership to kind of research it a little bit. I think what they're going to find is it's inconsistent. There's probably certain jurisdictions, because it's just, you provide a certain acreage, it's really a pretty vague standard to begin with, so people are probably, using it differently.
We're just blessed with so much open space as well. Yeah. You drive 20 minutes and you can find somewhere to.
Yeah. And we've got some amazing facilities in town. You look at some of the stuff we have. We've got a great park system.
We do.
So it benefits it. And one of the things that we kind of talked about why we were closer on the same page is, sure, we want to look at balancing, affordable housing with parks, because if no one can afford to live there, there's really no people to serve at the parks. And that's something we really have to look at right now, because people are getting priced out of the market very quickly. I was just in a meeting this morning and I talked about, what was it? For every, in the Portland, Vancouver area, for every $1,000 increase, 776 people are priced out based on what they can qualify for. From a house that's affordable. So for every $1,000 increase.
Yeah, no, what are you looking for?
This is something put out by.
The back bottom.
BIAW put it out. It was a study from NAHB and then brought into regional prices with their data. But when you look at it, so when you increase the parked impact fee by $3,000, that prices out thousands of people. So that can no longer afford to live in a home. So they end up renting. And then they go to apartment, which those apartments, while they do have a load on the regional parks, they provide a lot of recreational opportunities within the development itself. So they do have their own kind of private parks built in. And that's kind of that tiered system we talked about. So say you're building an apartment complex and you're providing for outdoor recreational place, you have a clubhouse, you have a pool, you have playgrounds within it. So they're not getting any credit for that now. So that could be where that falls into this two-tiered system, where you don't need, you still need the Luke Jensen's. The kids are still going to be playing baseball, but you don't need as much of a regional park, and they're not utilizing it. So,
well, I like your proactive thing as well on the trail system in advance of the developments. I mean, that's one thing that we're seeing a lot of in this area, is that people are recognizing developments happening. There's more and more congestion, and really it's about connectivity. I mean, so I think that's huge in terms of, parks are really important, but connectivity is equally important, and that would be trails. That would be, could even be, adjacent to a road, but it's a green belt, so it's, that's something that's oftentimes it's kind of unfortunate, but you have to drive to a park. It'd be wonderful if you could walk to every park mm-hmm. or have that opportunity.
It seems like to me, because they're younger, if we were to take them, they've been able to. What isn't calculated, and if we were to identify the areas like HB4 that we feel like should be calculated, like the other stretches of the Salmon Creek Trail system, and then if, I don't know if staff-wise, if there would be someone be able to calculate what that area is and then see how that matches up with, I don't know, I would just think if I was a Clark County counselor, I would bet that they have, that they are not aware of that, and I'd be curious to see if they were informed and educated on it, how they would feel and you know, what changes maybe they would want to see in relation to that calculation.
So I think to get that across, and there's a lot of number crunching and going through the maps, and you're basically kind of, basically what you're doing is redoing the park plan with different assumptions. That's kind of what we're asking them to do. And when they look at it, count all these things, see how they look. And so I think what we should do, I guess, is first put together kind of a letter with all these recommendations, and post them in our own, and maybe even provide a little bit of background. And then I think we need to get in front of council and explain it and kind of go over each one, because reading it doesn't tell the whole story. They need to hear what areas are
some examples.
Yeah,
I think you give them 10 examples, and I think that that's going to say as much as anything else that comes out of our mouth.
Yeah.
Do they look cross-jurisdictional? So, you know, like Round Lake and things like that? I know that's Camas. It wasn't always Camas, or maybe it was always Camas.
The county park is right there. That is the county park.
Is Round Lake County?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
yeah,
so Round Lake, and then what about there. state facilities, parks, something, you know, trails, and do those count, or?
You know, there.
For my own advocate, I honestly don't know.
When you look at regional parks, it's interesting because like Lacamas, like, and I think Round Lake's in there, actually. It is on their map. I don't know how they're counting it in their numbers and their figures, because not technically in their park district. But they mention them on here. And
like Lacamas and Round Lake, or is it?
Yeah.
Those are.
The Lacamas is in the city, but the Round Lake is clearly from the county, an RCO property.
So one of their special facilities in Missouri.
That's the one with the. I know, but with the waterfalls and all the.
Yeah.
I just discovered it like 3 or 4 years ago, and I was like, oh my goodness.
There's a lot of parks around, yeah.
No, yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
So some of the special facilities inventory that they're not counting anyway are listed here, and even some of the ones in the city, like the English Pit Rifle Range. So that's not counted anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I believe, in the city of Vancouver limits. And it's in the plan somewhere. I'm not sure if it seems some of them aren't. Like, how would you count that? Would you count that as a park? Would you include it?
For people that shoot and need to sight in their guns and all these, that's been around for so long, and it's a very extreme, well used, and I think used by law enforcement too.
Yeah,
I don't recall, but I mean,
that's probably why they don't.
So,
all they need to do is put a walking trail around it, and it should be.
Well, that's HB4. That's what I say. HB4. You got all the kids playing baseball in, you know, out there, and then you've got.
You know, my cardio in for the day.
Yeah, they do have a HB Fuller has a big walking trail right around
Absolutely.
The. Yeah. People are using it, and they're loving it. They walk and they watch the games.
I'm curious if other jurisdictions that have similar parks plans, in order to reach get closer to the national standard, are counting these.
I think they would be.
I would think they would be.
And Luke Jensen, I think, is a good example. So comparing that to, what is the one, the Fairgrounds Park?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a fairgrounds park. Yep. That's a perfect example of a small developed area. They've got some little gazebo things where you can, you know,
there's just a bunch of
the grass. There's a bunch of grass, okay? But they have a little bit of developed area. So that entire acreage is counted in the plan. Mm-hmm. Now take, Luke Jensen, okay? And they also have a small area that's counted towards the plan. And instead of having open fields that are providing some kind of, that providing no opportunity that are counted, they actually have sports fields.
Yeah.
So, I think the whole area should be counted, and that should be considered
it's higher and better use than what's at Clark
County. Just sitting there being grass. But that falls into the special facilities inventory. Prime Minister Sports Complex, Hawkinson Meadows Sports Fields, Luke Jensen, Tri Mountain Golf Course, that's an interesting one. That might be a true not, I don't know how you'd count that.
I would call that one a true not qualified,
yeah,
just because you got to pay to go there. I mean,
yeah.
And I would kind of put English in the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, you have to, I mean, pay per use.
Of course, you're now paying to go back to the parks again, which was, they were free under the last regime. So, like Frenchman's Bar.
Right. Yeah, no.
And Louisville Park.
You can walk there.
Yeah, but that's different.
You can walk right in. It's just a park.
That's different than a golf course where you're paying green fees, probably $40 or whatever it is.
$70.
Okay, I'm a little below.
That's
okay.
So, even on their plan, they're not counting some acreage for some odd reason, like HB4. They're calling it 0 acres. I don't know if the plan just wasn't updated, but undeveloped 0, developed 0, 2014 0. I think they just kind of got around
county owned. That was the ownership issue.
Is that
HB4
what it is?
HB4 is not a county owned park.
Right.
Ah, private. Yep. Yeah, but still. Some of Fish and Wildlife, they're not counting any of those.
You should be able to count it, though, as long as you have use of it. If
right.
it's taken away, then...
That's
public.
That was our point. That was our point.
Yeah.
That, you know, just because it's privately owned doesn't make it not open to the public and a viable recreation opportunity for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just...
Is there, Eric, a tiered system like we have for transportation where there's priorities? I mean, is that something that came up? I mean, part of what I'm getting
for
to
their is... For their capital facility plan?
Yeah, for the parks.
I'm sure they have one. I don't know that I saw it, or... I'm sure they have a plan.
It would seem like...
Implementation.
Like, let's say the next six areas that they're developing, it seems like whatever the connectivity and park... I mean, those seem like they would have priority.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where those are geographically, but it seems like that's the partnership piece of this, which is... perhaps them sharing more about what are those priority areas that they're...
I think we kind of need
to know what that is.
There's a lot of discussion about promised parks and, like, needing to have the funding to pay for the ones that they've already promised the...
People,
the public that they were going to be building.
And there's also some discussion about, you know, when they raised the fees, that they hadn't raised them for a pretty long period of time. And I hate to like use this example, but it almost seems like a Ponzi scheme a little bit, where the people they promised them to didn't donate enough capital because they didn't pay their fair share to actually build those parks. So the only way they're doing it is by charging the new developments for the old people's developments parks. And then that their money's gone. It's not going to go to them. It feeds the stuff in the past instead, where it can't all be done by impact fees. There has to be some kind of a backfill from more general funding.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I mean, in terms of the formula of this, you mentioned the tier system. You know, there could be a system where you put it in place and you just don't owe anything, you know, and that's not necessarily a credit system. I mean, ideally, it seems like if there was a way that the private side was building these, there would be more money for the county to do other regional parks they've not built. There's a lot of park trail system that's planned to be by kind of an extension of Vancouver Lake that has not been built yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that loop to Ridgefield, that's on the plan, but it's not, I mean, that's years out.
This is going to seem like a stupid question maybe, but what about that dog park at BPA?
I think that's the reason why I mean,
you start going down, and I'm just trying to think of all these recreational opportunities and the different needs, like a shooting range versus a dog park versus
almost equestrian trails.
I mean, exactly. Whipple Creek.
I think that they would have to have in the parks plan, and it's been a while since I've looked through it, but that they would have to have a definition of the. First of all, they have definitions of the parks, but then they have to have a definition of the other facilities and why they're not counting it. There has to be some explanation of that in the parks plan. Absence an explanation, if they do have it, we're going to have to get that changed. They're going to have to change that part of the parks plan. Otherwise, they're just going to say, sorry, our hands are tied. This is the parks plan that's been adopted, and we can't count these because of whatever reason it was, because that's the reason in the parks plan. We almost have to get them to change that. And I don't know if that's actually the case, and I'll take another look through there and see if that is the case. But a lot of these, they hang their hats on the definitions, the criteria that have all been adopted, and therefore, well, we can't count that because it's a fee area, or we can't count that because it's not open 24 hours, or something like that. That's where I think we need to start this process, to get them to change that part. Mm-hmm. Then they can count it as part.
Mm-hmm. To me, like on a school, at a minimum, there should be a percentage.
There should
be a percentage that's calculated against the space.
Mm-hmm.
And so then let's say that's open for whatever hours. You could throw that percentage of the day, and that's for the park. You know, you could do that. Mm-hmm. There's the full summer.
there's also, one of the things that's not real well defined in there is, you know, how do you assess the need for parks? I mean, is the demand for parks the same on a Wednesday as it is on a Saturday?
I think they have to look at it,
you know, or like Jerry just said, seasonally. I mean, that's,
you've got peak. I mean, you've got peak use times.
Yeah.
Then you need more park space during those peak use times, and if the peak uses on the weekends, the schools are available on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then,
so,
that's a good point.
That's a really good point.
As you start digging down into it, it's morass, because you know, you look at that. I just think of that BPA dog park, because I used to live right next to there. But that thing is crazy. I mean, the amount of people that go in and out and use that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a special use type of recreation, like a shooting. You know, range, but it's a form of recreation.
But cumulatively, all together, though, they provide
exactly
all these different uses. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. It's a morass. You got to look at it. You got to look at it holistically, because you know, people that have dogs will go to the dog park
off leash,
or they'll go on San Bernardino Trail on leash.
I don't do skateboarding. I don't want to count the skate park.
Right.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Count the skate parks. Yeah.
I'm wondering how many people in the county are complaining about parks. Are they?
Or
I mean,
lack
I know
thereof.
For what's that?
Lack thereof.
Or yeah, lack thereof. Because I know, you know, years ago when we, because I sat on that committee a long time ago, like 20, when we passed an increase in the REIT, I think it was, or whatever, to
which,
we had like a park crisis because people were really complaining. But I don't hear. I haven't heard many people complaining about recreation.
And I think one of those reasons why is that a lot of the development that has taken place since then, they are incorporating parks into their projects.
Right.
And we do have that new huge regional, which I would assume is out near 152nd. What's that one?
Hawkinson.
Yeah, is that called Hawkinson Park?
It's
really?
Yeah.
It's right next to it. Yeah. That's a bit. That's huge, right?
Yeah, and they don't count the.
Is that not
ball,
counted?
They don't thing. Count the ball field yep. complex over there,
Vancouver,
but they do count those
walking trails. I agree. I would. I think Mike said we got to start with the definition.
Otherwise, they're going to.
Does that one look like they're counting? Hawkinson Meadows.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're using that. They're counting that one.
But I think they're.
They are kind of. I would hope they would
but
count.
But the second they start developing it into ball fields that are used by leagues, then they'll take it out.
Which is not in
right?
soccer field. You got to reserve.
But they're going to put mini golf or disc golf in that one instead of ball fields. So.
You reserve pavilions. You reserve. I mean, people.
I'm going to take another look at that.
That's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of that whole thing there, and that for that particular one.
Let me mark that down.
So neighborhood and
something
community.
Okay, so the walkaway is a letter. It'd be a letter to council,
but
then also requesting FaceTime with council.
Yeah, I think that's the second piece, and we put that in the letter. So the recommendations are here. I mean, my goal today was kind of present where we're at. We're pretty much not meeting anymore as the Parks Board. I think until we get more direction from the council, we come up with the recommendations that we agreed on. We can still add our own recommendations.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. So I think what we do is that's why I included the letter they're submitting. So the Parks Board, not that we're on different sides, but I think you know we're working
there's
together.
There's just this piece.
We
that
just
want to
make sure they have both of the information. So they have this letter that's in your packet. Attaches a brief description, and then
and the same list.
It's in the wrong order, but the one right in front of it, the orange, is what they're attaching to it. Mm-hmm. So I think what we should do is we should do kind of our similar letter saying, you know, we appreciated the efforts of both the Parks Board and DEED members, and, you know, you kind of letting us explore the options. And here's some of the recommendations that came out of the subcommittee meeting. And then maybe some next steps, including meeting with them. Let me write this down.
So your PowerPoint here is just essentially what we've already
discussed. That PowerPoint
discussed.
Was the same things, okay. Just with pretty pictures. And we use that for the joint Parks Board meeting presentation.
Okay.
So again, just kind of reference. It's sure. The same type of things in there.
Okay. For me on the letter, it would be at least having like three examples of parks. What I think a common person
about.
Would assume is a park that is not calculated.
Yeah.
Jason.
Yeah.
That's one of our
HB4.
Yeah, Jason is a great example.
Or Little Creek Trail mm-hmm. System mm-hmm. or the Salmon Creek Trail System.
Yeah.
I think your park has got Little League fields.
Yeah, anyone.
Luke Jensen, that's the best one, probably.
Luke Jensen's a good one.
Especially
yeah.
Since
the
cost
one.
Of that is still fresh in the minds of some of the counselors.
Yeah. So the next steps then, okay, so to edit this letter to provide a little more detail. Mm-hmm. I made a few other things in here, like the dog parks, you know, not even just mentioning open space greenways, you know, BPA dog parks, mm-hmm. things like that aren't counted. Just kind of maybe throwing, every time we talk about one of the categories, try to find a few examples
yes.
and put it in there. And then for next steps, I think, let's see.
And we might even, Eric, we might even have a recommendation, and I'll do this. But might have a recommendation that they need to open this up. Open
that's going
to
be the other one, yeah.
As far as redefining why it is that they don't count. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, so that's yet to be determined.
Okay.
Just to add, I think the level of service issue for, like, neighborhood parks, I mean, I think those, I think, are different, and that's that kind of two-tiered system, but I think... it'd be interesting to know what is the deficit currently. And obviously, the recalculation would change that number. But I think on neighborhood parks, that level of service is different, and we talked about that briefly, than the regional stuff. I mean, I really mm-hmm. think that's the distinction. It would be interesting to know what that number is geographically. And could that, what theoretical percentage of that could be made up by private development?
I think regional parks are relatively well represented in the mm-hmm. in the PROS plan. It's just mm-hmm. because they, I mean, mm-hmm. it's Louisville, it's Little
yeah.
Creek, it, you know, it's the neighborhood. Neighborhood parks are really undercounted because they don't mm-hmm. count any of the pocket parks or, you know, anything less than 2 acres, I think, was the size.
Mm-hmm.
They don't count any of the homeowner association-owned parks. They don't mm-hmm. count any of the church-owned park or, you know, playgrounds. They don't... None of that stuff is counted, even if it's open to the public.
And then I think the maintenance is, as part of that example, the maintenance, there are some not great examples in some cities that they've done something similar to this. And... they've had a challenging time because they've not been maintained. So I think whatever examples are used, mm-hmm. what is that that keeps that maintained is really critical. Is that the HOA? What is that?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that was one of the arguments against counting pocket parks and HOA parks is because there's no, you know, right now there's no way to enforce maintenance on those things. So yeah, great. It's
donated to
it's a nice little it's a nice little park mm-hmm. right now. But then the one
they won't
no
because it doesn't mean it wasn't designed
right
there.
No, they just won't take it because mm-hmm. nobody's going to give. Sorry to interject. Just, yeah. Nobody's going to give them a park. I tried to do it, you know, but they wouldn't give me. I tried to give them a $2 million park, but they wouldn't give me $500,000 of it. Credits to offset my houses, so there's nobody's going to give you it. You're essentially getting it. They're getting it for free because they're literally not even handing me tips. They're just
exempting houses, okay, but the parks department literally wouldn't take it because they're trying to double bid. We want the land and we want the bids. Mm-hmm. So you can't give them away.
And one of the things too on the HOA side that I think is worth noting is that the state changed its requirements of HOAs, and starting for any projects that I want to say were plat approved post July 1st of 2018, the requirements for HOAs now is pretty high. So the management groups that are managing HOAs, or some neighborhoods are trying to manage it themselves, they're not going to be able to withstand the standard. Like, they're going to have to step up to another level of reporting and accounting and making sure everything's being kept up that same way. So that should help. It's not going to help the historic side of it, but going forward, it should help with the viability of HOAs. And that's partly why it was done. I think there was issues with condo associations and things like that, but that was something that was passed by the state, so I think it's something should be considered by parks, that that should be a more viable partner going forward for maintenance, where I could understand the past that has it.
Yeah, and that was one of Barbara had that one, you know, in her subdivision. They have a little pocket park, and things started breaking down, and then they just started disappearing because the HOA didn't want to pay to fix them. Mm-hmm. So then the park got, you know, less and less.
But in those instances, why can't you just recalculate the park then? Then you could pull it off, though, if it is viable. I mean, there's a maintenance, there's a cost associated with the inspection, I guess, but I just don't understand, like H.B. Fuller, why you don't count it at all. If it's
long-standing,
usable.
Long-standing, high-use park.
It doesn't mean you can't come back and take it off if H.B. Fuller was to remove
if they chose to develop the entire thing.
There's not only a trail there. There's actually, now that I think about it, by the parking lot, there's a bunch of open space and greenfield,
there's
I think.
There's the trail.
Oh, yeah, there's a trail.
There's a playground.
Right, there's a trail. There's a
gazebo. Yeah, it's you.
I use parking lots to do work a lot of times, you know, in between. Talk about multimodal. It depends where I am. Yeah. Seriously, that depends where I am. But if I got to pull over to
convince them to put parking fees on those ones.
I want to thank Eric
and
Steve for their work on this. You run your life however you want.
We were going to touch on
it's not like I'm sitting there doing crack in the park.
I go to the park, you know, it's just like, I know. BPA is the perfect one.
My brother and I used to go.
Pull right off and
read the newspaper and take it
out. No, Dave.
You can sit on the bench. That's what I mentioned, right?
Yeah. Emails and all between meetings, if it's, but, you know, and it's amazing how many people. In fact, that's the only people that are there during the day, or people in their cars taking phone calls.
You can drive your van and go to the park.
Yeah.
This is
your white van, no window.
I shouldn't have opened that.
So next steps, I think, for us is I can take a little bit of a crack at putting this into a letter. And maybe adding some examples. And the next steps that I have, see if you guys agree with this, and we'll have time to comment, but I'm going to say next step one is meet with council to discuss. Two is open up the plan with the new assumptions. Three is we're going to need code changes. Things like impact fee credits, things like that. And then we need to update the PIFs. And maybe you recommend freezing the increases until the plan is reexamined.
Well, I still want to point back Mike's idea about looking at the definition.
That's part of it.
Is that part of it? Okay.
So
yeah, that's
would that be opening up the park plan? So
I mean, really drilling down on the definition and seeing how different jurisdictions, whether they, if some define it stricter, some may define it, you know. But
I think there's the baseline of what's counted, and then I think the other important question is what is the limit when the county collects park impact fees? What is the limit to that? And I thought it was they could not do it for trails because
they
of some.
Now.
They can now. Okay, so the code, so that is great. So that would be another discussion point, which is, you know, I think about 179th, that all opening up, and like, well, how does that all connect? I mean, that would be a perfect opportunity to have that discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so
would
you go
would
that
next
way?
Month be enough time for having a letter
have,
look
you know,
at, or do you want more time?
I'll try. I got some of this done. It's just finding time to sit down and do it.
I'm just saying because we have an open
yeah.
slate
yeah.
in May, so.
I almost see this as being something that we circulate around and do an email about.
That's
why we need to have another meeting on it because we kind of took on a rehash, and I think we've talked about a lot of good things. We're on the same page.
Yeah, we beat
it. We get into like transport stuff, and we'll do the same thing.
Okay. Kids were little, you look for a park.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we
order, look for walk
we're running right. over yeah. time. I guess quick well on this on the agenda we are. Was there anything on public comment before we go to no?
I've got something that's related to why I thought this was a good decision.
Okay.
We can do it now.
Well, I mean, we're gonna be going over stuff to try for the schedule for May. So maybe it's something that fits for schedule for May. What do you?
It could be. So what we've run into as a company on a couple of recent projects through the county, we have some projects that have BPA land involved. We are being the staff is recommending conditions of approval associated with the land use approval, requiring us to essentially have BPA permits prior to getting land use approval.
It'll take a long time.
BPA works on their own calendar, and it's whenever they decide to look at something.
Yep.
So I have a project that our client started communications with BPA a year ago, probably.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a permit. And part of that is the BPA wants definition of exactly what we're going to do.
Yep. They want engineering
yeah.
plans.
They want detailed
they
plans.
They want I'm running
they
the same
to, they need to know. They want to know depths of utilities in the road.
Yeah.
So
that's the level of detail.
We've been told they want full civils. They rejected our application.
That hasn't been our experience, but I think we've provided them, so maybe that wasn't even...
But if you have to get full civils before you help...
It's a mix of issues. I mean, so they want more information before they're going to tell you whether they're okay with it or not. They run on their own clock.
Mm-hmm. You're way into the project.
Generally speaking, my experience is they don't bother to answer phone calls or emails as a rule. The exception is when they actually respond. And so we've got projects that can't even get to land use mm-hmm. approval, and we can't really control that on our end very well.
So
the government agency.
So that's that sounds like it's a Mitch decision?
Potentially.
I don't think there's anything in code that indicates that the
yeah,
county
I have
can't provide preliminary approval, the entitlement.
Right. I mean, yeah, our suggestion would, or kind of request, might be that the county issue a conditional approval that we've got to get a
yeah.
BPA permit before we can construct inside the right of way. And that might mean if we haven't done our end well enough, or if you know, we just kind of get stuck and BPA's unresponsive, and we took our best shot. Mm. And when they finally respond, it might hurt us. But
I think there's
the alternative is we're just stuck nowhere.
I think the county needs to let the applicant and the owner take the risk. I see that no differently than a core permit, and
yep.
the county should not
exactly.
be requiring
yeah.
a core permit.
Core
evidence
permit.
Yeah.
that's
yeah.
on the applicant. I mean, that's
HPA
completely on the applicant.
Right.
And it could change it, and you could be going through and having to
do decision review.
There is risk involved. I mean, but that's part of what we
some
do.
Jurisdictions,
yeah.
Some jurisdictions, they don't even mention needing a Pacific Power permit, a
right.
BPA permit, even
yeah.
though they've got those easements running
don't
right
get
through
involved.
Your property.
Yeah.
Green Mountain's a perfect example of it, where we've got both of them. And the city of Camas is like, we don't have any jurisdiction over
yeah.
those, so why would we even mention it?
Is there no pressure to be borne on BPA? That's a stupid question because I know they're.
So I was going to say, I don't know how frequently you you communicate, but I mean, we've been working with BPA for on one project for 2 years trying to get and easements out of BPA. Another project, it's been about a year that we were trying. Doneen retired.
She did.
Oh, that explains something.
Like within 3 weeks of her retirement, the new guy got us both permits.
Sarcasm.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, so she was the holdup.
I don't know if she was the holdup, but the new guy is just, apparently he has decided, wow, there's just not enough to do, because he cranked him right out.
Who's the new guy?
That's good.
I don't
Well, I know who to call.
I wasn't actually doing it, but I do have people in my office that have the contact information. So.
Yeah, that's frustrating. That's interesting.
Well, I think it would be the recommendation of this board that the county not have any say in outside jurisdictional permits that are required for projects. at a minimum, certainly not holding up the entitlement of a project before you get the permit.
That's the, you know, yeah.
Okay. I mean, can you pass that on to staff?
I will, actually. It's timely, and I don't know, Andrew, if it's your project, but it's Mitch is just inquiring.
Okay.
That's the one thing.
Probably the current one is Travis's, but I have another one that I have not pushed as hard on.
And we've
he's right now.
Paul tells me we're
actually
running out of land.
It's timely.
everybody's stuck dealing with BPA.
We have
out of land.
Too,
if I'm hearing correctly, we're seeing.
We just went through a process with them as well.
And we've got all these.
I didn't even know Donnie retired. Well, we just went through something in the last year. We went through something.
We're building. Yeah. But it was, funny because
I'm interested in everybody
months,
here.
If thoughts years about it, on these two projects, and all of a sudden it's like, we can go forward on these projects because we got the BPA stuff.
Compared to we can't even get a site plan approved.
What would be really neat is to work with BPA to have them have a set procedure, but I don't know that.
But I think that goes beyond what Andrew's saying.
No, I understand. I don't think that's it's possible, but you know, it sounds like everyone's getting
it's like
different.
Working with the FAA.
And, I mean, there's
because we were told that we submitted a plan and we were told because we want to put stormwater ponds under the BPA. And we were told we need full civils, and it's like
that's what we did.
How do you do that?
Actually,
we can't do full civils without a stormwater.
Do you get a permit from BPA?
We have not.
Well, when you do, they have language in there saying that if it ever conflicts with their use, you have to move them. That's always in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I mean, what do? You put a stormwater pond in there.
I think some of this depends on, is it an easement or is it right away?
Right. There is.
And I don't know what that circumstance
is.
Yeah,
we're easement. Yeah. There is a big
difference. That's a lot better if you're an easement.
Yeah, no, it's a big difference, but they seem to be all over the board.
They write the permit the same way regardless, though, and you have to fight them on it.
So it's the same thing with the FAA. City of Vancouver, you need FAA approval for, like, we're working on the Academy project. They say, you know, you just have to get FAA approval before you can build. Period. Okay. You know, they don't say you have to have FAA approval before we give you the preliminary site plan approval. It's just ridiculous.
I think the construction
building's not even designed.
The construction tie-in. I see that element. I mean, there's a. Yeah, that's the gray area.
So get it through
prior to construction.
Make it a contingent or a conditional approval.
Yeah.
The land use, but it would be required, say, at building permit or stage.
Or construction drawing.
Civil approval.
Civil engineering approval.
Prior to construction, before they break ground.
Yeah, prior to construction.
I don't know what you're...
Just in the essence of time, we do have to figure out some agenda items.
Yeah.
So that was all I had.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing to add for an update. Maybe we can talk about it. I don't know that we need to take a lot of time.
I think staff needs to update us on that. I think staff needs to update us on that.
Okay.
That's going to be their call.
I have one other suggestion for an agenda item then, and that is, from what I'm hearing from some of the builders, that the lien process for single-family residents is kind of breaking down. The percentage of the ones that get kicked out is extremely high, like in the 80-90% range. So if that's the case, there's something wrong with the system. It's not that the applications are all that bad. What came up in another meeting is, what are they actually looking at? Are they calling review comments something to kick it out? Or is it that things are missing from the application? Because to review it, the concept is it's complete. not that it's 100% right. So I think what's happening is the way this thing has evolved over time, they're saying unless it's 100% right, we're kicking it out.
Yeah.
And that's what the review is for. As long as you have enough information to review, it shouldn't be kicked out. It should be a review comment, and it should still follow the lien process. So maybe an update from the building department and whoever's there on the lien process, and at least start that, because apparently it's become a pretty big deal.
Okay, but that's specific to building permits, Eric?
The lien process for building permits.
Yes,
for
building residential.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, and it'd probably be good to have Mitch here, which he probably would be part
yes.
of it.
Yes, we probably need to update him and get maybe
but
Jim.
Part of my concern would be, well, Jim and Curtis?
Yeah, whoever is really following that. But
well,
I mean,
Mike Curtis is
permit manager.
Permit yeah. manager, but you know, Mitch, I think, has put them under, he talked to us a meeting or two ago about, you know, metrics and standards mm-hmm. and things like that, which are awesome and we need them. But a lot of times when you get metrics and standards, that's when people start kicking stuff out. Because,
yeah.
you know.
All of a sudden you're being measured.
You're being measured.
I want to get 100% every time I take
yeah.
a test.
I mean, that's, we do that, it's gotten better, but, you know, when you put timelines on preliminary applications and things like that, so.
And then something else, I know that Mitch is looking to expand the, what's he calling it now?
Functional Oversight Team?
Yes.
Yes. And what he is looking to, what he's looking to look into next.
Okay.
It'd be good to know about that. I'd like to be on it, you know, as it would be applicable to my area of expertise. But I know that the single family residential tax law thing, I think that's kind of run its course,
mm-hmm.
is it not?
It has. There's still one piece that I think we need to figure out, and that is review of stormwater plans and what level of detail they go through.
Okay.
And I have some ideas, to tell you the truth. I haven't put it all on paper, because what I'd like to see done is a flowchart. Instead of it go through a detailed review that has to go to a third party, it's a very simple flowchart that basically says, are you using this BMP? Does your site plan, one of the biggest issues I see is the site plan and the stormwater plan don't match. And the reason why they don't match is because you submit them at the same time. And then they change something, and they already have their stormwater plan, which doesn't match the septic design, which doesn't match the home plan.
Organizationally, Eric, that is set to change. That's still set to go into Brent's shop.
Okay.
So it's set to go in there. And I totally agree with you. I could see where Brent's probably working maybe with some members of DEEB, maybe some staff. What's his checklist that we want to? I think he's going to want that for his staff anyway. But that's organizationally, that's where we're trying to move that body of work. Is bringing in house. It's going to go under Brent.
Wait. Brent stormwater is going to go under Brent.
Yeah, for the rural tax lots.
For
the rural tax lots.
Here's what happens with the third party reviewers. So we got to get rid of the third party reviewers on those. We should be able to have a technician. If it's a stamp plan, they can go through that checklist.
That's where he's looking. He's working with the council right now to get the staff to do that, and that's the whole intent. It comes in, it stays entirely within that group.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at a technician level, they're basically looking at a fundamental checklist. If it hits all the boxes, it's good to go.
How is Brent's team doing? Because the rumblings I hear on Brent's side is, you know, from the habitat and wetland standpoint, his team is not moving very well.
It's not that group. It's adding staff and getting staff in there that's specific to.
So you know what I'm talking about, though.
I've heard some things.
Okay, you got. I mean, no,
we do.
Okay. Well, I'm. Agenda items. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's.
So maybe that's something
that
we can look at.
And
like time-wise,
I know
there's other people looking at it. I think coming up with that checklist should be one of our priorities, and getting rid of the third-party review for this.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of under the functional oversight. I don't know if it falls on DEEB yet, but we can be a resource.
Great. Do you want to wait till that gets kind of sorted out, and then they can come back to
yeah,
us?
Yeah, Brent's doing things to set that up, but he's got to go through Office of Budget to get positions approved. I mean, he's working on it right now, but that's the end goal in all of that, is to get staffed up to bring the engineering techs in, and then that's the body of work that they're going to be doing, and not put it out to third party any longer. So,
yeah, if we just had a bunch of extra spare time and resources, I would say it'd be great to, like, the guys that I have in-house that do these stormwater plans, to come up with their own checklist of what they think that should be reviewed. And I know it's getting bogged down on details of going through the stormwater calculations on the WIM model. And the WIM model is not set up to do small things with dispersion. There's no way to model it. It doesn't even work. Mm-hmm. So there's workarounds that we've like agreed upon with county staff, and they, you know, they understand how it works. It goes to the third-party reviewers, and they're going by the book, and there is no way to make it work. It's a fundamental flaw and limitation of the program. So there's no way to model it. So we end up spending a lot of time going over these insignificant items when we still have the same facility that we thought we'd have without doing any calculations. Mm-hmm. We know it's going to be a flow spreader. We know a pretty good idea of what it's going to be, what the size is going to be. Then we go through all the calculations, and we argue about that, and we still have the same thing we proposed, you know, 100 pages less, and 100 pages later, and three reviews. Mm-hmm. And the same solution. The most significant ones are always, this doesn't match, and it should have been caught, because we didn't have the update either. The builder didn't tell us they changed the plan. So those should be checked, and that's where the resources should go. And the other part is, are you using one of these BMPs? If you're using this BMP, does it meet these spacing or the best it can? Does it meet this or the best it can, based on dispersion? There's like, basically you're doing infiltration, dispersion, or slush flux. Those are kind of what you're doing.
Yep.
So, are you using one of these BMPs for your home? Mm-hmm. If so, do you meet these categories? Done. Review's done. No going through the WIM. It's like, it's assumed to be correct if it hits these boxes mm-hmm. and checks. And those reviews can go in 15 minutes instead mm-hmm. of multiple reviews. So, that's like where we need to end up.
And I think that...
But all this is steering in that direction at staff level.
Yeah.
And Mitch, that's where Mitch wants to go with it. And... You know, that's already been decided. Brent's working on it. He's going to need, I'm going to say in all honesty here, he's going to need the second half of this year to get it. His position's all approved, hired people in, they start to train up. But that definitely is part of it, is create like this basic level fundamental checklist that probably is going to apply to 90% of the projects that are out there. You know, hit the checklist, run it through. The work leaves, you know, our outsourcing, it'll come in under county staff, you know, for that. Development engineering will actually take a bit of a backseat role. It will just be there for support. If they happen to hit a project for whatever reason is a little more complicated, you know, we'll come in and assist them. But that's where that's all going is in-house and with added people that are dedicated specifically to that. And you know, consolidate it, streamline it.
Well, I think when staff does that and they come up with that checklist, they should have some involvement from the private sector as well.
I see that happening. And that actually may be part of the functional oversight team. That may be a body of work that we're working on at that time. So.
Yeah.
And just to add to what Eric's saying as a segue to that, Mitch was going to come back and maybe part of the functional oversight team, but the template for like, what does the county expect for land use applications? You know, what is that? They're getting all kinds of different varieties of things. Some applicants are providing very detailed narratives, for example, for pre-app. Or
that's already ongoing. Yeah.
And
she's as part of the new LMS rollout, particularly once it goes to all electronic submittals. I know that Susan, well, we've already looked at developing a fillable PDF for narratives that you simply go through and it's either not applicable or you explain how you're meeting the standard, and it's the same format for everyone. It is what staff will use in order to write their staff reports, very similar to the checklist that is now been implemented. That is the same list that is being used for a fully complete review, which is why I've held off broaching that to see how well that's going to work out. I think that there's still some improvement to the fully complete review, but I'm willing to see how that new checklist plays out. It's the same exact checklist. Similarly, the narrative is going to be the same narrative. I know that there are some firms that regurgitate the entire code and then respond to it every single section, so you have an 80-page narrative. There are some that just have the sections in there that apply,
and respond to those. So it's a 12-page narrative.
No, it is.
And everything in between.
Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, this is that's ongoing. Okay. And as a matter of fact, it might be good to maybe talk to Susan, same time you talk to Mitch about the functional oversight team, see where she's at with that and whether or not that can be implemented before we go to an all-electronic submittal process. I mean, I think that it'd be nice to work out the bugs with that before, you know, kind of do a soft rollout on it. I told her we'd be happy to, you know, beta test it on a project. Mm-hmm. I just haven't had anything in the county for quite a while.
Now, she came the last time or so where, you know, they had consolidated all the checklists.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking something beyond that then?
It's a narrative.
Land use narrative.
It's a template for land use narrative. A full PDF.
It's not clear in the code what you're supposed to really provide. I mean, to Mike's point, I mean, how far do you go? And the staff seems to focus on particular areas, which may not be what the applicant is focusing on.
Right. And what it all comes down to, you know this as well as I do. Is that as long as staff can write a finding of fact and if necessary conditions of approval, that's all that's necessary. To provide any more is a waste of time, waste of your client's time, waste of your time, waste of your client's money, waste of your time. But that there are some times when, like, you'll get an out-of-town architect, they'll provide a one-page narrative.
Yeah.
Yep. You know? And sometimes, I'm sure it doesn't happen anymore. Sometimes they actually get approved.
Would that be irritating
or true?
Has. In the past.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, though, because if you have too much of a standard template, you end up with a bunch of junk in there that doesn't apply to anything.
Well, and that's the idea, though.
The Department of Ecology forms for SWIPs, that's 100 pages of nothing no one ever reads. It should reference the manuals. There's a lot of junk in those things.
But at least what and what we worked out in the PDSG was that at least the applicant has to respond in one way, shape, or form. It's either not applicable. That avoids then, oh, hey, by the way, you didn't address the criteria for approval of a subdivision, which is oftentimes something that gets missed in applications.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden staff's having to write, you know, the applicant's response when the applicant should have had that included in the first place. But it's not a fully complete item.
Yeah.
So they can't go back and say, well, you didn't address this criteria. Now they can say, hey, you didn't address this criteria in your narrative. Because it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that. But you're right. I've done projects in Gresham. Gresham is, oh, you have to address this code section, this code section, this code section, this code section. And you need to respond to every single, 90% of it was NA.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up being a 50-page narrative because of that. So I think that there's a happy.
Yeah, you got to figure that out. Just, okay. Yeah, more of an outline.
But I'd like to see if there's an update on that.
Perfect.
So maybe, you know, those are staff updates for May and
I have, make a full meeting.
I have another one, and this may not be one that other folks are dealing with as much, but a critical aquifer recharge, the CARA process.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very, very narrow band of what is exempt. The entire Clark County is a CARA.
You're right.
And that band is getting smaller, it feels like to us. Like virtually impossible to not have to do one. And it's a fairly expensive process to hire a hydrogeologist to do this.
Now, there has been some flexibility. Staff has allowed some flexibility with regards to that.
sorry, this is a new one to me. I mean, I know Kara. I haven't run into it yet.
If you have any infiltration,
no, even if you have a
level one environmental review, and have a hydrogeologist, write up a report on it, and thank you for bringing that up, because that's been one that we've run into also.
That's starting to come back.
So are we putting that on the agenda?
Well, I'm just asking the question. I mean, at this point, it's a discussion.
I think that's good.
And that would be Ollie's group in particular. I mean, and not to pick on him, but it's in his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is it's not a really well-written ordinance to begin with. I'm just going to be frank. I mean, it's and I think it's challenging because...
Well, it's fairly narrow originally, too.
Well, it is, and I think... Well, that, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and part...
Like you said, the ban's expanding.
Well, in the county, the entire county is a... That's the only jurisdiction in the entire Clark County. The entire county is a CARA. Vancouver, they have wellhead spheres of influence.
Same with Camas.
Camas the same way. Most of them have specific dots on a map, not the entire...
The county started out that way, right?
I'm not sure what the origin...
Way back when.
Yeah,
I thought they did.
But it's a challenge. I mean, part of it, it's a financial exercise to go through. And, I mean, is there another... Can we revisit it and say, does it really apply, number one? And then number two, if you're doing a generator, backup generator,
yeah.
which happens a lot.
Yep.
I mean, really, the bottom line
we just
is...
We just had that come up.
No, I know you guys did. The bottom line is, if it's got a backup redundancy for, like, if everything spills out of the tank, should that not be enough versus having a hydrogeologist actually explain that? You know, if you have redundancy...
It's have containment.
Exactly. I mean, and that's a building review, really, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be the building department. So that is an item that I just feels like there's a lot of exercise going into something in the end where it's like, you know...
One of the main stormwater BMPs that's pushed is infiltration. And all of a sudden, that's a class 5 injection 4 injection well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a little...
Infiltration is out?
Yeah.
So a parking lot, you have to do a CARA for parking lot.
You have to do a CARA if you're going to do any infiltration in the county.
And I think part of that is the ubiquity of this, you know, and again, not to pick on this at all, but I don't know if the county is following through on that for their own road projects. Are they doing a CARA for every single road project?
Well, they don't always put in street trees on their own road projects, so...
I'm just...
Okay, let's pick on people now.
Sorry.
I love it when we have extra time. This is all good. But infiltration is now what? A type 5 injection
type 4?
It's an injection.
You got to register it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
a class 4. It's
an injection.
I don't know.
So it's really...
Anyway, you got to register it.
It's kind of narrowing the band. Yeah. You know, what are we trying to solve? I mean, that's it. You know, and is
which
there...
Which means a level 1 environmental. And a hydrogeologist for agenda for next
we have time. at least 4.
The great thing is, I don't know if any of the 4 actually on our list.
Yeah, they are. Okay. I did look at the list.
With that all,
adjourned. Okay.
Thank you.
Now we can talk.